And I got a pen out here because I'm going to talk with Frank Rich, and I always like to have a pen in my hand because he says things that I always want to write down. Is that, yeah, that works. Frank Rich is in New York City. Frank Rich used to write the opinion page on Sundays in the New York Times, you know, and was the only man who actually explained what was going on in the Middle East there. We decided we had to invade one of them countries, Iran or Iraq. And he was a lifesaver. He was the only, like, voice of reason. And so I love the guy for that. Love you, Frank. It's not on yet, so I can say that. Also, he is a producer on Veep. He is, I believe he's Selena Meyer's, Vice President Selena Meyer's brain there. It's all actually Frank Rich in there. Would you welcome, please, from New York City, Frank Rich. Hi, Frank. How are you? Are you there?
Hello?
Frank.
Hello.
Frank Rich.
I seem to have lost the volume just now.
You did? Can you hear it now?
Very faintly.
Faintly?
Okay. I could hear you perfect during the monologue.
Oh, you could. Well, can we turn me up for Frank? And how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. So the Veep season is all over. It just wrapped up, didn't it?
We just wrapped up. We shot most of it in Los Angeles this year, but we just did a week in Washington, and it ended yesterday.
It did, huh?
And I'm excited about it. I'm not objective about it, but it's been tremendous fun to work on it.
What a great show.
Thank you.
One of the outstanding shows of all time, I have to say. And
and
that, of course, my saying that means nothing, but it still is anyway. You know.
Well, no, I appreciate it. I trust your sense of humor, so I'm thrilled that you like it.
Brilliant. What is your... Now, you're a producer on that, right?
Yeah, I've been involved with it since the very beginning.
Yeah.
And being a producer, no one quite knows what it is, but actually, and it can be different things on different shows and different people, but I'm sort of involved with all of it, from the beginning generation of scripts to casting to, you know, diplomacy on set to being there, watching cuts. It's very all-involving. And for someone like me who originally began as a theater nut, it's been incredibly exhilarating, I have to say.
Now, this diplomacy on the set, what is that?
It means you've got, you know, 100, 150 people working incredibly long hours.
Mm-hmm.
And our set is a really happy one and calm one, but, you know, sometimes people get aggravated, including me. And, you know, part of a producer's job is to be there, kind of like being, I don't know, like a managing editor of a newspaper or a magazine, really, to help make sure people are happy, things run on time or not, and the rest of it.
But JLD, she's not a prima donna, right?
I have to say, one of the two or three, or maybe the best thing working on the show is that Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who I had never met. In fact, I got involved with Veep before she was even cast.
Really?
Is just a fantastic person. She's obviously a very extremely talented actor and comic actor, but also serious actor.
Yeah.
And she is just an incredibly hardworking person. She is the first one on set every day getting stuffed into a wig. And she stays to the
end. And the last one getting pulled out of it at night.
Yes, and she's there till the end. You know, she'll stay for scenes that she's not in, even though she's in most scenes.
Yeah.
And she's just a fantastic comic mind about
You don't have to sell me. I'm in love with her. I've always been in love with her.
Yeah,
for as long as I can remember.
Well, it's love well placed.
Yeah.
One thing that I discovered about her when we first met each other is that we have in common something that's not that usual. We both grew up in Washington, D.C., both with families that had nothing to do with politics, and shared a contempt for the city that we feel realized in this project.
Yeah, to this day.
This day, yes.
That's interesting. I interviewed her one time, and she did it. She said she was in her jammies, lounging in her bed in Brentwood, wherever it was. That's not good enough, probably. And did the interview that way, and it was hard to ask her any questions, tell you the truth. Whereas I don't have that problem with you, Frank. I don't know why.
Well, thanks. Well, she'll answer anything, and she's just whatever the opposite of a diva is. She is not a diva. She is smart and has no airs and game
amazing.
For anything.
She's good. Now, Donald Trump. Have you heard about him yet?
Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
We've heard about him. Yeah, we heard about him a little bit on set. Yes.
One of the reasons I want to talk to you, because I always like talking to you, but one of the reasons is that you wrote a thing back in the New York Magazine.
Right.
in September, and the title of it was, it's kind of interesting, because you always think against the grain. I like that about you.
Thank you.
And Donald Trump is saving our democracy. Now, is it meant to be provocative, or actually, do you believe that?
It was meant to be provocative. Actually, it was the cover line that I didn't write, but I'm willing to take it. It was meant to be ironic. My point, and I'm getting ready to return to the subject for New York. I'm starting to work on a piece today, now that I'm back. But my point, which I still completely believe in, is that here's a guy who is a narcissistic, bigoted bully who has absolutely no credentials or anything else or temperament, as everyone says, for being president of the United States. But he is doing us one favor, which is he's exposed how corrupt and empty so much of the political apparatus of America is. And if one good thing comes out of this horror show that he's unleashed, it's that. He's shown that pundits are completely wrong. Everyone, when I wrote that piece back in the fall, people were, had been predicting for weeks or months that he would implode. He never did. He's proven that pollsters are wrong. The New York Times upshot column as recently as right before Super Tuesday was seeing a path to victory for Marco Rubio, supposedly based on data, whatever data they were using. It's maybe what the Liberty Digest used when they predicted an Alf Landon victory in 1936.
Yeah.
He's proved that the Republican establishment is a paper tiger, if it even really exists, which is one thing I'm going to take up in my next piece. He's exposed Republican Party for its ideas of the past several decades, and particularly during the Obama era. His ideas are completely consistent with the party. It's just that he doesn't say them in code words or elegantly. Yeah. He just says them out loud.
They're consistent for erratic ideas.
Yes.
Frank, I'm a little disappointed. I thought you meant they actually was saving our democracy. I have really nothing to say to you because I thought that's such a
nothing's going to save our democracy.
Such a good counterintuitive way of looking at it, and I thought we could go with that. And I'm sorry to hear you feel this way about him.
Well, the one thing is he is reminding us how democracy works, and in the end, the voters actually have the say. So this morning's New York Times front page story that the Republican rank and file is appalled by Mitt Romney, thinks his speech telling them whom to vote for or not to vote for Trump, more accurately, was a joke, reminds us that actually voters do have a say, and it isn't controlled by the elites. And the results may be horrendous. I think he's likely to get the nomination. But it will force Americans to figure out whether they really – maybe they do want to vote this November and not stay home because something really is at stake.
Yeah. Do you think he's closest to Juan Perón as a candidate? Or where would you put him on that spectrum?
I don't know. He's more like a Vita. But
but can he sing?
With a version of the same hair, perhaps.
Yes, and very. I think his hands are sweet. I honestly do.
When
he waves them with that little mouth thing, I'm somewhat attracted to the whole thing. I can only speak for myself.
Maybe we shouldn't go there.
No, we shouldn't. We definitely shouldn't go there. But do you think he actually is a political individual? Is he a political beast at all? Because it sounds like a lot of the stuff he's just trying to, say something. And he's very good at saying something or anything. But
I think you're absolutely right about that. I don't think he is particularly political. And to the extent that I've followed him or even had encounters with him in New York over the years, he's not been a political guy at all. He's a salesman.
Just in terms of zoning or something like that, you can see that.
Yeah, he cares about his image. And his image, that's a form of, I guess, public relations politics. But you can tell that most of his opinions are the last thing he heard on Fox News or wherever he's listening to or someone told him at a party. He doesn't think anything through. I mean, we all know this. It doesn't make it, what he's saying really doesn't make any sense and isn't internally consistent. But that doesn't mean he can't run for president or theoretically at least be elected president.
Yeah. He strikes me as being like the father-in-law from hell.
Yeah, the father.
Yeah, you marry a Trump daughter, man.
Yeah, exactly.
The dinners are going to all end in brawls.
The crazy uncle, the Archie Bunker that you wish didn't turn up at Thanksgiving.
But do you get a sense of the man? I mean, is he like this in private as well?
My limited viewings is he's completely vain.
Okay, that's cool.
He's glib. He's a glad hander. He likes celebrity. He likes money. He likes opulence. He likes things. He likes the grandstand. I think what you see is what you get. One of my oldest friends in journalism is a guy who ultimately left journalism named Tony Schwartz, who used to be a reporter at the Times and actually wrote The Art of the Deal and has co-credit for it on the jacket. You know, as a young writer when he was leaving journalism, and this is like almost 30 years ago, and he's, I talk to Tony all the time, and he says, this, what you see is no different from what he saw when he was writing, and he did write it. Trump didn't write it. He apparently read it after Tony wrote it. But when he was writing Art of the Deal, Trump was like 38, and the same person then that he is now.
Yeah. Have you seen the Funny or Die Johnny Depp version?
Oh, wonderful.
The Art of the Deal. I recommend that to anyone. Once.
Yeah, that's just terrific. Yeah. But it's interesting, like the John Oliver piece, which you referenced in your monologue, I don't think these things, however brilliant, I don't think they have any effect whatsoever.
No. Why would they?
Yeah, why would they? Yeah, it's not, it's hilarious to me as a daily reader of the Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, each day now they have almost, they're in a race to how many editorials and op-eds they can run attacking Trump. In the case of the Post and the Times, it's from the left. In the case of the Journal, it's a conservative editorial page. They're all doing it. I don't know who it's for. They might as well just wrap fish with it right away.
Yeah. In many ways, they always talk about Reagan, at least in the beginning, being a Teflon man. Everything just, nothing stuck. But you can't beat Trump because you can't, first of all, you can't really parody a parody. So if you're going at him from, trying to make things sound ridiculous that he's saying, it's already there. So it has no zero effect, really.
That's exactly right. And indeed, when we're working on Veep, our show, for those who haven't seen it, we never reference real life living politicians. We've never had a reference to
Clinton
or Obama or Bush or
Joe Biden was on, though. I saw Joe Biden was on.
No, not on our show. No, we did a little sketch with him for the White House Correspondents' Dinner, but we never mention any real politician, unless it's Nixon or earlier on the show.
Oh, it was Parks and Rec, sorry.
Parks and Rec, right. No other shows do that, but we never do it. But in any event, we're watching, we would never have Trump, Representative Trump, or even a parody of him on the show. Sure. But we're sitting around making the show these recent weeks, and we think, would we even think of the plot twist of Selina Meyer, our president, Julia's character, getting into a spat with the Pope? It would be ridiculous.
People would be appalled.
That couldn't possibly happen. You really jumped the shark on your show if you'd have that idiotic a plot development. Yeah. So you can't compete with it.
Really? Out pontificating the Pope and winning, apparently.
Apparently
the Pope
winning.
Seemed to back down on that one.
Winning his favorite thing to do.
Yeah. Good. What can you do to him? He's Presbyterian anyway, right?
So exactly. He doesn't give a damn. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing is the bluster thing. I mean, the candidate and the debates have been ridiculous, of course. This is the worst series. This is the worst political discussion since, Burr and Hamilton. That was bad.
Yeah, well, actually, if one sees the show Hamilton running in New York, that's pulling out a gun and shooting at each other seems a step above the last Republican debate in terms of civility.
At least it was formatted. It was according to format.
Exactly.
He lowers the debate to the level that he's comfortable on, which is saying anything, just say something. And then you feel bad for like Cruz and Rubio and these guys who aren't used to doing that, and you end up with that most ridiculous of all debates, that last one, which about body parts, among other things.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I don't feel so much sympathy for Cruz and Rubio because I feel you know, they have their own, and Rubio's attempt to you know, dive down into the sewer was particularly embarrassing. But look at someone like John Kasich, who everyone refers to as the one adult on stage. First of all, the bar is now so low that if you just behave like an adult, that's supposed to mean you're a great statesman.
Yeah, or look like one.
Like
he looks
a two-year-old.
Like one.
But he did. But what? And he actually didn't get into the muck. But I don't think it did him any good.
No,
no matter.
Nothing will.
Yeah.
So okay. So you can't really, and there's no, so there's no discussion of issues. And when there are, you flip flop. What was the latest thing? Terror.
Yeah, he's changed. Yeah, he's a little bit flip flopped on, I guess, a little bit on torture, a little bit also on immigration.
Yeah,
it really doesn't
torture.
Matter. But here's the thing: you have Romney attacking him for flip flopping. let's not forget that Romney essentially invented Obamacare.
Yeah,
in
point.
Massachusetts. So. You know, these people, there's no one in that party to take him out because they don't have, none of them have any real ethical or moral standing that I can see.
Yeah.
In the leadership.
And he would have gone down on his knees if Donald Trump had asked him to.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something we'd all like to see.
Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe not. What do you think about a running mate? Have we gotten to that point? We actually,
well, you know, I guess the favorite on Twitter is Omarosa. you know, what I was thinking this morning about it, actually. It wouldn't surprise me if, you know, a Rubio or a Cruz did it. You know, after all this vitriol, obviously Chris Christie wants it, but I think he's the Scalia successor on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, he stands behind Trump.
He stands behind
but
that.
But you still see him because it's Chris Christie.
Yeah. but I imagine that he, you know, Trump is not an idiot. He sometimes or often comes across that way.
When it's useful.
When it's useful, yeah. And people love it. And, you know, he says things like, I love the poorly educated. You know, who can make this stuff up?
But, and they love it.
And they love it.
Yeah.
But he'll find somebody clever for vice president. He'll find someone that will and that might be politically useful to the extent that any vice presidential candidate really helps a ticket. I'm not convinced that's true.
Yeah, yeah. We should mention Hillary in passing, at least.
Her. That party.
What have you thought of her campaign and her presentation and that yellow thing she was wearing in Milwaukee?
The yellow thing, fine. I find her a very uninspiring candidate, which is not to say I don't think she is far and away the person who should be president, or she's running against, particularly she's running against Trump or any of these clowns. I wish she were a more spontaneous, less cautious, less squaring the middle and seemingly disingenuous politician than she is. We need, for those of us who do not want Trump to be president, we need her to be great, and she's not great. I think that the battle with Sanders, which I think is probably now coming to an end, I think that it's hard to see what's going to stop her now, at least technically an end, it will continue, he'll stay in the race for a while, has helped her a bit. I think it's made her sharper, it's made her turn attention to issues she particularly about inequality she might not have looked at so carefully, but I do worry about it. I think people are right to worry if that it's going to be a real race. It's not going to be a slam dunk victory for the Democrat over Trump, assuming he gets the nomination.
And don't you think that, you know, like the elephant in the room that no one is speaking about is you know, Bill Clinton as first lady?
Yeah. Well, I think that would be a lot
there.
Of fun.
Yeah, yeah, no, for him, for him is what I'm afraid of.
I really think, you know, the Republicans have tried scandal after scandal. Benghazi, I swear to God, I think the poorly educated, most of them don't, a lot of Americans don't even know where it is. That failed.
Yeah.
I think that unless it turns out that she was a mole for Al-Qaeda, I just don't see the email scandal being anything more than an embarrassment. And I actually think people really don't care that much anymore about Bill Clinton's sex life. That said, I'm worried about donors in the Clinton Foundation, the murkiness of that.
And Trump being one of them.
Trump being one of them. I also, here's a perfect example of why her campaign is not better than it was, as it was supposed to be, than 8 years ago. It was the William Jefferson Clinton Foundation. Why, on the eve of running for president, would you allow it to be changed to the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, so you as a presidential candidate are going to own anything bad that went down there? I just don't get it. I don't know what the thinking is of the Clinton campaign.
Yeah. Well, I would have liked to help her with a router, too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things you wonder, you know, just... Okay. Router is an electronic device that is used in home networking. Oh, and John Oliver says that in your in Stitches.
Yes, exactly. He's good.
Well, I mean, at this point in history, in this electoral process that we've just seen now, do you have any general feelings on the state of the American democracy?
Not too big a question, is it? I feel that Trump's saving it. No, I feel this has been an incredibly interesting period, the Obama period. We've discovered that our democracy is very flawed. We've discovered that race remains an often intractable issue in this country, whether it's manifested with police population relations or in a political campaign like this. We have a major political party that is essentially an all-white party, and that was the case before Trump arrived on the scene, and it still is. So we've got a lot to deal with. On the other hand, there's some very positive things, including, in my view, I have many criticisms of the Obama presidency. I think it's been a pretty impressive show of governance, particularly given that he's facing a Congress that's so in an opposition so placably hostile to him.
Yeah. Frank, I thank you very much. I know you got things to do. Probably got a cast party going on.
No.
Is that over with?
I'm just going back to my writing work, but yeah. It's great talking to you as always, and congratulations on this wonderful run on the show. This is fantastic.
Thank you very much. Frank Rich, ladies and gentlemen, from New York City.